are some leisure activities you enjoy besides gaming?
Leisure.
Sports and leisure. Old Trivial Pursuit category. Never quite understood. Now I do.
Gardening's up there high for me. I love gardening.
You're a big gardener. I didn't know you had a green thumb.
Yeah, I built my whole patio the last year or so and laid that out. And then
that's gardening?
That's construction work.
Yeah, that's carpentry.
That's part of creating the garden itself and the bounds of it. And then once I had the bounds of the garden made, my new favorite thing is to find perennials I've never seen before. I hate purchasing annuals.
Yep.
I hate having this really pretty flower show up for 1 year. And then I got to buy it again. Mm. So hydrangeas are big for me. Hostas are big for me. There's this Michigan purple flower bush I found last year. The problem is Home Depot, they're in with big perennial. And they don't want to put out, or big annual. They don't want to put out the good perennials. So I got to find a couple nurseries. Maybe on Long Island. Maybe near Glenridge.
Ain't no money in perennials.
I know. I always wonder that. I always wonder that. I'm like, how do you price a plant that lives forever? That just like grows forever. It's like, you know, it's a terrible deal. You should just always sell annuals so people always have to come back.
Here's the thing. We have four hydrangea bushes in our yard, and they're beautiful when they bloom. And then there's just these ugly ass, like, straw, eyesores the rest of the year.
They look like the bleached coral fields off the coast of Australia, the Great Barrier Reef. They look dead in the wintertime.
I'm looking at them right now at my window. They're just ugly. I just want to chop them down.
Well, that's why you need to mix. That's why you need to mix evergreens in with the perennials. And right now, unfortunately, my yard is bifurcated between the right side, which is all perennials that kind of go to sleep in the winter and are dead like that, and then the left side are boxwoods and some Carolina jessamine, which is a crawling bush that is covering our fence. It's some good hits. But yeah, half of my yard is just like dead in the winter, and I got to try to rectify that this year.
Matthew, you got a green thumb, not as big, but more hairy than Grant's?
No, Caitlin does most of the gardening for us. I'm very bad at it, and I have very little patience for it. But I try to cultivate some of the things I buy her. I don't buy her like cut flowers. I buy her flowering bushes so that they can come back. I bought her a nice set of tulip bulbs this year, and they came out of the soil like they were supposed to right shortly after they arrived. They started to bloom and then immediately died.
Oh.
So I called for them to send me a replacement, and 17 phone calls and half a dozen emails later, I got a giant orchid instead.
Oh, wait! You tried to get your money back on the tulips?
Well, they were supposed to they were supposed to bloom like within a certain number of time after they arrived, and we did all the care things right. And I was like, "Your tulips?
Did you plant them prior to the first frost? They're supposed to be in the ground and receive a frost.
They came the planted. In a
oh, really?
Planter. Yeah. Huh. It was like through a flowers website.
That's not gardening.
That I won't mention because I want them to eventually be a possible sponsor for the show.
Is it Books?
It's not.
It's Books, isn't it?
It's not. I won't say.
Is that your favorite leisure activity, gardening? Poorly?
No. I don't. How did we get on the gardening as a subject for this podcast?
That was Grant's leisure activity. And then I was segueing for you to tell us your leisure activity by finding out if you had a... It was really just to insult your hirsute body.
Yes. You never miss an opportunity to do that, do you?
I can't. Well, you shave it. I'll forget about it.
No, I enjoy cooking as a leisure activity.
Oh, you do. My wife is always like, Matthew and Caitlin look like they make the best dishes. Like, yeah, but they don't eat meat.
It's true.
Yeah. So it's not the best dishes, which is very, very good dishes, right. But just not the best.
I don't know. You can have the best pasta dish with meat or without meat. So
yeah,
our pastas true. Are our game.
God, I love pasta so much.
I love pasta so much. I need it every day of the week.
Pasta is Joe's favorite leisure
it's
activity.
So hard.
Eating pasta.
Pasta and cheese.
That might be my favorite leisure activity. Fuck the cooking. Just eating the pasta is my favorite leisure activity.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of things that I like more than this. But one of the things that I love most in the world is just a fine cheese, a big hunk of bread, and a movie. Just sitting there watching something and shoving bread and cheese in my fat face. It's so relaxing and enjoyable.
We've never been to Little Italy together, the five of Sydney. I'm sorry, you're not invited. But
that's okay.
We.
That's fine.
So mean.
I'll go on my own. I'll have a really good time.
We'll bring a table across the room.
Be like, don't look at us.
You keep putting up the menus like cartoon style.
The gentleman brought you their bill and said you'd know what to do.
You do not pay another table's bill. We learned that last episode.
You do not pay another table's bill.
I'm just imagining Sydney like Michael Caine at the end of Dark Knight Rises.
We should do that sometime, though. Sydney, what's your favorite leisure activity? We know Joe's is cheese and Matthew's is pasta and Grant likes hydrangeas.
I don't know. I think it's hard when you have hobbies because sometimes they turn into, I mean, you guys know that very well. Sometimes your hobbies turn into your job. I think I dabble in lots. I like gardening. I just got an aerial garden. It's like a hydroponic system, so I can garden in my apartment since I don't have a yard. I like cooking a lot. But I think my favorite leisure activity is like, one, browsing Craigslist for free stuff and seeing what's in the neighborhood.
Really?
That is one of my favorite leisure activities, looking on the free stuff page of Craigslist. It's wild. And two,
trampoline.
What's been your biggest get? Like, what's been your best best prized free Craigslist item?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably like random stuff, like shelves that people were just tossing on the street, but they were like nice, like good system shelves with the what is it called? Like the metal runners that have the brackets
like
into
container
them.
Store kind of. Yeah.
Yeah, like stuff that costs a ton of money for no reason. But that being said, I love doing craft stuff. So if I can like fix a sink, like I don't know, I just love to like fix things around my home and space. So I'm like, I could like make this more functional. And I go to the hardware store and I buy a bunch of shit and I come back and I watch a bunch of YouTube videos. So I think for me, that's my favorite leisure activity is like handyman work around the house.
Handyman work around the house. Skid, you big handyman?
Yep.
That's your thing. You just
that's
love
my thing too, yeah.
Taking things apart anything. And putting them back together.
Love seeing it make something tick. Lately I've been trying to fill in, the thing I've been enjoying most other than sports is just filling in, I talked about filling in my cinematic blind areas. So just seeing classic movies that I've never gotten around to seeing. That's something I started during lockdown and kind of continued. I watched Kramer versus Kramer the other day. I'd never seen that. That was fun.
That classic. Is a great movie. It's so sad, but I love that movie.
You should read the stories about what Dustin Hoffman put in Meryl Streep through that movie.
Yeah.
It's truly awful.
You ruined that movie for me, but
yeah. There was another great movie about a child custody battle, but it lacks something. Oh yeah. Arm wrestling.
All the best child custody movies have arm wrestling in them.
Very true. Sid, I gotta mention this too. I've mentioned that I think on the network before, but you talk about like browsing Craigslist for like what's in the neighborhood, and there was this thing. I don't even think it was ever viral, really, by the definition. But back in the day, and I'm looking it up on the website, and it looks like still the last one was written in 2013. So it's been a long time. But this dude used to prank people on Craigslist and write them to like buy their shit.
Oh, I remember this.
And then he would fuck with them. And I'm telling you, I would laugh out loud reading these entries. They're so funny. And I just pulled it up, and the most recent one is a guy selling a fish tank, and he's adamant in his post that you have to call him and not respond to the Craigslist post. And so the guy immediately just, the guy who's messing with him, writes like to his email to the Craigslist post. And the guy just writes back, call the number, like in all caps. And he goes, what number? And he writes a number. And then he's like, I tried calling and it went straight to voicemail. And the guy's like, I didn't hear it ring. Do it again. And so he keeps getting this guy into like writing a million messages until he starts to tell him that he's like, he goes, is your phone number a fax machine? Because I keep hearing a fax sound. And the guy's like, it's my fucking cell phone, dude. It is not a fax machine. So oh then this God. Dude calls his cell with a fax machine. And he picks up his cell phone. And he's like, dude, stop trying to send me faxes. Because he picks up his cell phone and like, here's a fax sound. And then this is where it goes off the deep end. He says, oh my God, dude, enough with the faxes. And then this guy writes him and says, sorry, I set the fax machine to try sending the fax every 15 minutes until it goes through. It was the office fax machine and I already left for the weekend. Can this wait until Monday? And then he calls the guy every 15 minutes. The guy says, no, I cannot wait until Monday. Are you fucking kidding me? And then he goes, I'm sorry, I can't go back. I'm at the airport. My flight to Vancouver leaves in an hour and a half. I'll cancel the fax on Monday when I get back. I mean, and they're all like this. It just has you. So anyway, it's called Emails from an Asshole. Just Google that. They put out a book of them on Amazon. They were so fucking funny.
Oh, I've never heard of that. I can't believe it. That is so funny.
So good.
I used to read those at work, and I would just like be sitting there trying to stifle my laughter, just crying because they're so fucking funny.
Amazing.
Well, we're going to need some leisure activities after the five of us die in this obvious ambush.
Yeah, your Delta into. Green agents are the annual flowers of RPG.
Brought it back around.
You guys are in a really difficult situation, and things have gotten really intense. As you got in the car at the end of the last episode, you're literally, this is what you've come to. You're just driving around because you can't go anywhere because you're being watched, you're being followed, you owe multiple people meetings at different times. You don't know who to trust. You might not even know who you really work for. It's getting super intense. And I think that that has good repercussions and bad repercussions. So I've got some good news. I've got some bad news. Good news? Well, which do you want first?
I always want the bad first.
Okay. The bad first. Okay. Bad news first. The tension in this car is getting a little out of control. I need everybody to roll a sanity check.
Oh wow.
That's the bad. I thought you were just going to say we're out of gas.
If Caesar loses it, man. All right, we got to roll.
He's right on the edge. He was on the edge in the bathroom, yeah. And now you get him in the car, tell him you don't even know who you're working for.
Oh, I'm going to fail. You have to roll under your current sanity, right?
Under your current sanity.
Yeah. No.
Oh, I made it 37 under 40.
Gavin made it to 23 under 56.
Okay.
Magdalena makes it as well, 42 under 65.
Wow, I thought that'd be a lot more fail.
Jordy failed.
Oh,
89 no. over 79.
Oh, wow, you got good sanity.
Oh, wait, no, it's current, right?
Yeah.
So
it's
okay, so 89. Yeah, 89 over 60.
Okay, and then Caesar?
57 over 43.
No, Caesar!
Oh, no. Roll a one.
We might have to kill Caesar
it's
before
it's not a roll. Both of you take one sanity damage. This was a 0-1.
It's just a 0-1, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Grant, so, what's your breaking point? Unless
my
you don't want to share
it. It's 40. It's always 10 less than your total, right? Or is it different for everyone? Okay.
Oh, it's your sand minus your willpower, right?
Had I failed, I would have argued that I'm adapted to helplessness, which is the feeling in the car.
Yeah, do we get adapted towards anything?
Yeah. It is helplessness. And you are, so Roger, you're actually fine. In fact, I think I might have misread that before. I have to read up on that again about being
acclimated.
Yeah, there's some. I think I made it sound like it was too easy, but whatever, it's fine. We'll figure it out. Either way, it goes to show you that there's a lot of tension in the car, and you guys are starting to fray at the edges. How does this manifest for Caesar?
I think Caesar is having a really hard time following the debrief that Roger is giving us all over if you like pina coladas blasting through the radio as loud as it can.
Escape.
It's just juddering his head, and he opens up he starts rolling down the passenger side mirror of the car, and he just sticks his head out of the side like the Joker in The Dark Knight Rises. Shakes his head out the window to get some air, and then comes back in and reopens up Haunter and sees if it's going to go off, very nervously rocking back and forth.
Oh, no. And what about Jordy? How does it manifest for Jordy?
I think Jordy is, yeah, he just all the pressure of the situation is starting to get to him. And he's managed to, through all this, he's managed to maintain a pretty high sanity through everything. But he's just like starting to maybe hyperventilate a little bit with his bad lungs.
Okay.
And he goes for cigarettes and he's out.
Oh.
He's like fumbling and he's like, he like crumples up the packet and like rolls down the window, throws it out. He's like, he's like, he's just trying to like, he's like beating on his chest, like trying to like calm down.
Okay.
Roger will bum on the smoke.
Oh, thanks.
It's not your brand.
Just what the doctor ordered. Oh, thanks, buddy.
That's a not insignificant detail that Troy and I both know about as former people who have smoked cigarettes in the past. Not having your brand when you need a cigarette is not optimal. You're doing it because you need to satisfy an urge, but it sucks when you don't have your brand when you need a cigarette.
Just give you a brand that you don't give her. It was an American Spirit Blue.
That's my backup brand. Well, it's my backup strength. It was American Spirit Yellow Smoke.
All natural. They're good for you.
Why do you think Jordy doesn't have that much sanity damage?
I think because he isn't specifically inured to, and like he doesn't have any instances of like immune to helplessness or violence or whatever. But I think he's been just so close to death for so long that he's like, I think he's kind of come to terms with it, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like the sweet release of the grave might be something he's looking forward to. It's a bit of a relief. So he's just like, I might go crazy, but it won't last long. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. The good news is you all level up.
Oh.
As you sit in this car and you start to freak out a little bit, you also start honing in how, in what a dangerous position you are now. You start to become hyper-focused on, you need, try to explain this. So basically, there's a lot of shit coming at you from a lot of different directions. As players, you might be a little flummoxed. You might be a little bit like, what the fuck are we supposed to do? That feeling is totally understandable. You're supposed to feel that way. But remember, your characters were hired or brought in or whatever, were activated by Delta Green for a reason. It's because they have faith in them and their ability to not only get the job done, but to focus while doing it. And also, each one of you is very, very good at certain skills. You guys have sets of skills that if you apply them correctly can probably get you out of just about any situation. So anything that you have failed out lately, level it up. So the original was 1, I guess. The errata was 1d3 minus 1.
And then 1d4 minus 1. That's what my sheet says.
Yeah, something like that. And then I believe they errata'd the errata, the latest I saw. And it's just a 1d4 or a 1d3.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to try to... fine, I had it ready.
Which is
and
it?
I lost it.
I feel like I'm on a Delta Green mission.
It is now straight up 1d4. It's not 1d4 minus 1.
Wow, okay.
All right. This is just every skill we failed at, we roll 1d4 and add that many points.
Oh, amazing. So I'd failed an alertness roll.
Even though
I have an 80.
He did, yeah.
That's right.
And I rolled a 4, so now I have an 84.
I had the same thing happen to me, Troy. I got 1d4 and rolled a 4 for alertness.
That's amazing.
That's great. Now, think about, what does that mean for Roger? I mean, has he ever been in a situation like this where he doesn't even know who he's working for? And so I imagine his senses are just like...
yeah. And his search went up by 1. So, yeah, this is... I mean, he's been in situations. He's been in every situation, but this one is difficult. Not knowing who the mark is.
Yeah,
I have Joe. I have a fail. I I have like an asterisk next to history. Did I roll a history and fail it? I feel like I did.
I think you did when we were researching the journal, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yep.
Not sure why you would have an asterisk, but either way, you would just level up.
I can't check the box on my PDF, so I just write an asterisk in there.
Okay.
Can you highlight the box?
Anything else remarkable for anyone? Anybody get something cool in a certain ability?
I also failed a history and last episode, and I rolled a 4 on that, so I have a 64 history now.
That's great. You also failed, if memory serves, in archaeology or anthropology. It was one of the two.
Oh, yes, that's right. Failed. Okay, so let me roll for that. All right, that's another 2. Or I think that was archaeology. Yes. So that's 62 archaeology.
Great.
And Magdalena got I rolled 2 4s as well on search and on alertness. So I'm bumped up just a little bit, 54 and 45 now from search, because I had 1 point in there earlier.
Nice. You'll remember the critical moment when Caesar botched the autopsy at the Suffolk County Examiner's Office, so he now has an extra 4 points in surgery.
Amazing.
No, he just got +2 in alertness and +3 in search, which is now 22 and 26. So not as an amazing gain as Comstone's failed.
Still, it's great. And those are the ones you're more likely to fail at. You know, you keep chipping away at those.
Yeah.
Joe, should we check a box for an incident of sand loss without going insane for helplessness?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but you didn't lose it. So if you've passed the check...
Oh, I see. I didn't have any loss.
Yeah, right. You don't check it. You only check it if you fail the check, but don't go to have temporary insanity.
Learning from your failures.
I don't think I did that for violence last time, but I'm not sure.
Cool.
Yeah, so great work. Now, let's talk about all this shit that you got going on. And I need to retcon a few things since our last session. I've had to revise the timeline and really take into account the travel times and all that shit for everything that was going on. So, it looks a little bit more like this. It's currently almost 10 o'clock in the evening. And the meeting is going to be midnight. So you've got a little over 2 hours until you're expected to meet with Eileen Parker and friends at the recycling center. It is also within the next 30 minutes or so, Magdalena is supposed to report in to the police station, the local police station, and put them at ease and let them know what happened or what she witnessed. And then... I don't think you have anything else that's particularly time sensitive. I think those are the only two things you need to make decisions on in terms of time sensitivity.
I mean, it may not have gone very well, but we do have a win in that we have the amulet in our possession. So presumably, there's not going to be a vicious flying monster that's going to come and kill people that a teenager was angry at tonight. Mm. So... that's a win.
Yeah, let's take the victories where we can get them.
Yeah,
that's a big one.
We're a poorly seeded playoff team in a weak conference right now. Hopefully, not to be crushed by the number one seed.
You guys, honestly, I don't want to go too much into it, but the fact is that you are. You know, it's fun as the handler to joke about what a disaster you are making, you know, and how you're digging yourself deeper and deeper. But the truth is, I mean it when I say that, you know, your character's skills can be put to good use. And to quote Lebowski, nothing is fucked here, dude. Nothing is fucked. It's just you really don't have anything quite yet that is irreparable. You just have to focus and put your heads together and figure it out. You can do it. You can do it. Especially since three out of the five of you passed your sanity. You're holding it together. Tell me what the plan is.
Well, okay, here's my thought. I think we should go to the green box. And I think Magdalena should call Gregson and say, sorry, you know, we lost the cell service in a tunnel or whatever. I'm on my way. I got a call from Carson. There seems to be some sort of problem. Can it wait? We're busy with the case, but I'll be there as soon as I can. Blah, blah, blah.
straighten this up, straighten out this mess.
Yeah, and just play it off. Yeah, play it off the way Gavin did and just be like, we were all in the city. We're all together. What do you want from us?
Yeah, like, what do you need? We're busy solving your fucking case.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We can be like, listen, it's a teenage boy. When we went to interview him at his house, clearly there was some weird fascination between him and one of our team members. You know, who knows what he's got up, you know, it's happening in his mind. We don't want to make any trouble for him. Like, there's a lot of ways we can spin this.
Yeah. Maybe the amulet's driving him insane.
I don't think we should bring up the amulet.
Well, speaking of the amulet, I think in addition to making this phone call, maybe prior to going to the green box drop, considering we don't know who's who, we might want to bury the amulet if that's our plan prior to going to someone allied with the first agent.
It's interesting. Like, we're worried about this possible ambush with the agent from Jordy in my past. The green box could be another ambush.
Right.
Yeah. If Carson's the bad guy, so.
Yeah, I think Grant's right. We should probably, unless we're going to use the amulet in our plan, we should ditch the amulet first, make sure no one sees us, and then go to the green box.
Yeah, but where do we hide it?
Yeah, hiding it makes sense. It just makes me so nervous. We, like, lose complete control of it, you know?
Storage locker.
Caesar spent some time and hears the storage locker and nods and says, that could be a good idea. I've spent a lot of time, some weekends up in the Hamptons with some of my friends. There's a lot of forest out here no one ever goes into. There's also a lot of houses that aren't occupied this time of year. Because it's kind of cold and winter.
Oh yeah, it's off season, so. Totally.
Good idea.
That's a fun idea, actually.
Put it in a house.
Bury it on someone's property.
Put it in Dan Rather's house.
I think I'd like to roll like a luck roll to see if like I have a friend who has a house out here. And if I would know whether they were out of town or not.
Yeah.
And I want to set up a bomb so that if someone's tracking us and they go and find it, the bomb explodes, killing them and burning down the house.
Burning down the whole neighborhood.
I don't know if the Vanderpumps are going to appreciate that or not, Roger.
Standard procedure.
Let's not do a luck roll. Let's not do a luck roll. Let's do a charisma roll.
Okay.
Let's see who your real friends are.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's not... Like, for Caesar, it's almost borderline, like, I could just give it to you. He is a New York-based fucking, you know, playboy. It's like, it's not out of the realm of possibility at all that he knows people that own houses in the North Fork of Long Island. But let's just make it a roll.
Yeah.
The charisma of eight.
Like, even if you can, like, bring it up casually and chat with his friends on, like, a messenger app or something to see if they're gone or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, who's at the Hamptons? Anybody want to hang? Sorry, bro. I'm in L.A.
That's the luck roll, is if they're there or not. That's right. The luck roll. Right.
84 under 85.
Oh, man. What a charismatic fellow.
Wow. He's losing his shit, so he's not as charismatic as he normally is. He has a magnetism to him because of his jittery nervousness, but he's not as like smooth an operator as he normally is.
Okay. Yeah, so you've got a friend that has a summer place near here.
Okay.
Near the bay. He owns a boat and a house nearby.
Of course he does. He's a rich
dude. He owns it. Yeah, it's near the...
Hide it on the boat.
Yeah, or drive the boat out into the middle of the ocean and put it near a buoy. Dangle it from
That's
a buoy.
That's kind of fun, actually. I mean,
yeah.
Hiding it underwater is fun, and then
we're making it as impossible to find as possible.
Yeah, the waters off of the coast of Long Island are not easy to see through a lot of the times, and I don't think we've requisitioned the appropriate kind of underwater tracking stuff. We would.
I can swim.
So you've got a friend, you can name them, that has a house nearby. Actually, it's not too far away, and it's on the Peconic Bay, and they own a yacht that docks at the Old Cove Yacht Club.
Okay, so his
the
name
Martin
is...
Martin Cove Yacht Club.
Martin Cove Yacht Club.
His name is Madison Westcott, and his father is one of the top real estate attorneys in Manhattan. He leverages a lot of the, or he doesn't leverage, he negotiates a lot of the mortgages and buyouts for eminent domain, so they make all their money by hedging poor people out of their homes and building large mega luxury rental apartments on top of it.
Cool.
And this is like this house says like Westcott 2 on it. They label it like they do their yachts, and this is his son's like minor villa. It's not like the main one, so this is Madison's place. I know exactly where we can go. My friend Madison, he has this killer modern architecture place. There are a lot of windows, but he's got a lot of hideouts place. He's got panic rooms. We could find a place for the amulet there.
I think we should consider ditching this car.
Well, it's interesting you say that. Madison also has a exotic car collection that he keeps out here on Long Island, away from Manhattan, where things might go wrong. Maybe he'd have something interesting we could drive there.
Oh, yeah, like Cameron's dad and Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah, yeah.
You're a fan of that movie, Jordy?
I love that movie. It's a fun jaunt.
All right, so the plan is Magdalena is going to call Detective Gregson.
Blow her off.
Put her off, see if we can put her off for a few days. Then we're going to go to Caesar's friend's house to stash the amulet somewhere, change cars, and then go to the green box, and then make a plan for how we're going to approach this meeting at the recycling center.
Yeah,
right?
Roger's going to swim out and place it somewhere off the dock. Naked.
It's freezing. It's fucking freezing. Like, unless you have a wetsuit.
You cares?
You can't.
He's a former Green Beret.
He's not a Navy SEAL.
That was a famous aquatic stealth op. Green Berets.
I'll take the boat. Swim back.
The boat is not near the house, for the record.
Yeah,
it's take one of the fancy cars, all right? Well, I'll drive our car out there. That's how I'll ditch it. I'll just drive into the ocean as far as it'll take me.
It seems to be a totally different plan from what we...
That's a very different plan than what we're talking about there, Comston.
Sorry, I really wasn't listening.
All right, I'm going to go out on a limb here and try to move the story forward just even the slightest little bit.
Good luck.
Why don't we do Magdalena's call to the police department? Why don't we start there, and that can be this episode. And then next episode, you can spend an hour just talking about getting to Caesar's friend's house and all the details of what his dad's cases were recently.
Oh, Joe, you seem a little tense. Are you okay?
And then I am going to roll a sanity check. Glenridge Police Department.
Hi, this is Magdalena. I got a call.
Holy shit. Hold, please.
That can't be good. I look at Gavin and I go, it's
Gavin just makes the universal sign for hang up.
And Magdalena's like, no, why would...
Click. Magdalena?
Is this Gregson?
Yes, this is Detective Gregson. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Sorry, we were going through a tunnel. We lost cell connection, and I completely forgot to call you back. We're out of the area right now. We were headed back from the city, but we're on something with the case. Is it important? Do you need to talk to me?
Yes, I do. Well, we have a young man here, Thomas Dingler, who says that he spoke with you, I mean, just a matter of hours ago. And you're saying you were not in... You were in the city?
Yes, in Manhattan. Hours ago, I spoke to Thomas Dengler yesterday with our entire team. We were in his house.
What is your persuade?
Oh, that's just 20%.
Oh, the standard. Okay. Well, you sounded pretty good to me. So I'll tell you what. I think you pulled it off. Give yourself a plus 20%.
Okay.
And go ahead. Your voice was very confident, and it jived with Gavin's story. So go ahead and roll.
Ooh,
come
boy.
On. Just beat it.
Just beat it, beat it, beat it.
It's a critical fail.
I'm just going to roll the other one. I was so close. 30. Oh, wait. No, I did it. 36.
Oh, yeah. That's
under
it.
40 with the plus 20.
Nice. 36 under 40.
Beautiful.
She rolled a 75 over 60 on human. So you did just fine. So she says, you spoke with him yesterday. Okay. I'll have to talk to him about that. But we do have an interesting break in the case here. I think we're going to keep Thomas here, at least as long as his parents will allow us, because did you guys happen to... when you went into Lauren Harrogate's bedroom, you didn't find a cell phone, right?
A cell phone? No. No. Well, we didn't really do like a sweep of the area. We just took notes on what the break-in was, if it was, you know, okay, out of the ordinary or, yeah.
Yeah, he said that he was supposed to meet her, and he showed us his cell phone, and he received a text message from her earlier today, and so we're trying to figure out
from Lauren's phone.
Yeah, and I really wanted to speak with you because I feel like this is one of the reasons that the FBI sent you here, is because you would know about this. Could a killer actually like hack a phone? And
absolutely,
then...
absolutely, this changes everything. Yeah, this absolutely changes everything. This is a major breakthrough. Okay, I have a lot to think about. I did want to tell you one thing, Gregson. I got to hang up in a second. We're on the highway. Thomas seemed off, and I'm worried about him just mentally. I think maybe the deaths in a small town, he seemed distant from his mom. I know he's a teenage kid, but when we talked to him, he just seemed really, I don't know. He didn't want to talk to us, and it, not in a bad way. But
are you suggesting that he's a suspect?
Absolutely not. No, I think he's just a kid. But I want you to keep him safe. If he's with you, just keep him safe.
Well, of course we're going to keep him safe. That's our job. What I want to know is, what were you doing outside the city as far as it relates to the case? Is there a lead in New York City for this?
No, I had to go to B&H to get some replacement parts for one of my computers. It totally bugged out the other day, and I was trying to do some connection with the CCTV cameras. It just, I fried my laptop. Yeah.
Roll persuade.
That's not a total lie.
No, it's not. So you can have a plus 20%.
Okie dokie. That's not good. That one. That one's a 98 over 40. Boy, howdy.
She says, Okay. Well, why don't we pick this up on Monday? If you could come by, we could compare notes and see where we're at. We're going to keep looking into this cell phone thing and where the signal pinged. It's a little beyond our scope, but I'd love for you to take a look at it, and maybe you could figure out where this hacked phone signal came from. This could be a really important lead.
Absolutely, and please call me if Thomas gets another message, if any other kids get any messages from Lauren's phone. That is extremely concerning.
Do you have any suspects that you could name at this stage in the investigation, or are you still kind of operating like we are without any sort of person to focus in on?
Yeah, we're kind of operating blind right now, but I will let you know as soon as we have some semblance and could actually report on something.
Okay. How about 9 a.m. Monday? Does that work for you?
Yeah, copy that. 9 a.m. Monday.
All right, we'll meet back in here. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
It's going well.
Kevin, all things considered.
All things considered, we're in the clear.
Here's the deal. So some good stuff, some bad stuff. But you know what I'm thinking? This is out of character. I'm not saying this. But the fact that I told her a lie about what we did outside the city... She doesn't need to know. We're FBI. Like, I don't have to tell her everything.
Yeah.
She might just assume we're withhold. Like, we're working something. We're not telling her, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Good thing she didn't see your face.
She said that.
I could see a lie in every word by the twitch of your eye. And the tremor in your cheek.
Kumson, you're so close to me. I can smell the peanuts from your DQ. Please back away from my face.
Nice.
I see your lies.
I see your lies.
Right.
I see your lies.
And he wipes the broken shell of a Reese's Pieces out of his mouth.
It's disgusting. I tell the group about the Monday meeting, and I'm like, I think we're good for now, but let's get our shit done this weekend so we can have our everything together.
So we can just blow off the meeting and never come back?
Right, exactly.
Well, you'll be dead by Monday. All right, so checklist number one is off. What's next? Talk to me.
Yeah, hide the amulet.
Hide the amulet. So you're going to Caesar's friend's house or yacht?
His house.
House. You drive to his house, pull up outside.
Yeah. Want to make sure we're not being followed.
Yeah. What's Gavin, like,
everybody can roll alertness.
Okay.
Can I also like drive in such a way, like get off the highway, take back roads, like do that kind of thing, just in
you
case
can
I
roll
miss.
Drive.
Okay, great.
And you can roll alertness. So tell me what those two rolls are.
I should drive. Oh no. I got a 37 under 84. So Roger is
33,
very...
which is a crit, right? Under 44 for alertness.
Yeah, that's
a
crit.
Ooh.
For what?
For alertness.
Okay. And drive?
21 over 20.
Oh no.
Why are you driving?
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
I think it makes sense because Gavin's
I rolled. I just, you know, we're learning the game still, and I just want to let you guys know how this goes. I rolled really, really, really well. But the way I rolled a 12 and a 15, a 12 stealth, a 15 driving. So the way this plays out is your head-to-head roll, I forget what it's called. I'm blanking. What's that?
An opposed roll?
Yeah, your opposed roll. Both of you succeed because you rolled higher numbers but had a success. So that is a success over the 12 stealth. The 15 drive and your failure at drive means the following. You notice you pick up a tail at a certain point during this drive around, and you notice the tail and you try to avoid the tail and you are unable to. So no matter what you do, you still see these headlights in the distance and you start to think that they might not even care that you can see them. But you are being followed.
I drop caltrops out of the back of the car. I fashion caltrops out of the long Dairy Queen spoon. Toss them directly out the window in a way that they'll have to run over.
Okay,
there.
I need a craft caltrops roll.
I have an 80 in that.
Wow, you're like a Grant character, a Grant built character.
I can't shake the tail. Comstone, do you have anything we can do?
Yeah, pull over.
Gavin pulls over.
Oh no!
What does the other guy do?
Onto the shoulder.
Car
of the
just. Goes by.
All right. Let's go again.
I'm happy to drive if you're not up to the task, Gavin.
You're able to keep it together?
Wow.
I don't know. Comstone, give me one of those cigarettes.
Hold that. It's not your brand.
Oh, it's my brand now.
And he takes the wheel. He only has a 40 in drive. He's not that amazing, but
you're probably the best driver of all of us.
I'm sure you are.
Yeah. If it was a tank, I could drive it. That's my jam.
So with the help of everyone else in the car, with alertness rolls, letting Caesar know if anyone's out on the corners or down beneath his eye line, he's going to make a drive check to evasive maneuvers, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you get back on the road. Doesn't take too long. You pick up a tail again.
Come on.
So now you're going to try to... So what this role is you're trying to get to your friend's house by losing the tail.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. So it's another opposed drive.
Watch this, Westover.
83. Over 40. Oh,
no. Watch what?
Watch what?
Oh, my God.
I rolled a critical success.
Oh.
So you just can't lose the tail.
All right, man.
All right, I have an idea.
What's your idea? They're good. They're good.
They're very good.
What's your idea?
They're very good. We find a place to throw it out the window, and then we still drive to your friend's house. Pretend that we're planting it, and then just remember where we tossed it out the car.
Won't they just see us toss it out the car and stop right after we drive by?
Try the pullover thing again. That seemed to work. Toss it! Fucking toss it!
We could pretend to toss it.
Yes.
We could toss a bag out the window. We could toss a DQ bag. And they could just be... They could go try to get it.
Yes. Yeah. Magdalena, give me your necklace. He rips it off.
Jeepers.
That's just my normal necklace. That's not the amulet. That's... What do you want my necklace? Talk.
And he chucks it out the window.
What's really happening?
I like that you now just have to ask that.
I love that I have to ask it four times every episode. What's actually happening?
He loves it.
I kind of love the idea of bringing the Dairy Queen cup back into this, hiding the amulet in the Dairy Queen cup, making a big to-do about us hiding it in this house or hiding it in the water, and the whole time it's just sitting in a Dairy Queen cup on the side of the road. You know, we have to go through, we realize we're being tailed, we just go through the whole rigmarole, make it look like we're planting it there, but we surreptitiously hide it somewhere else. Doesn't have to be Dairy
Queen. Here's the question though, what is our, well, just trying to figure out who's who, I guess, is why, but shouldn't our motivation as Delta Green agents be to destroy this amulet?
We don't know.
We don't know. We don't.
Because our orders are to destroy it. But if the people we think we're working for want it destroyed for nefarious purposes, and actually Eileen Parker wants it not destroyed is who we should be working for, then obviously we don't want to destroy it. We don't know. What's best?
Yeah, the only reason that actually makes sense to me as someone who just wants to stop the unknowable horror from creeping into the world and destroying it is that if destroying the amulet will somehow not allow us to get rid of the beast that's coming out killing people. If we think we might have to sanctify this amulet in order to get rid of the creature, then I'd be okay keeping it and trying to do this. But if we thought that destroying it, but we don't have evidence either way, so.
What if you do?
I wouldn't call it evidence. I'd say it's circumstantial at best, but you're not operating completely in the dark. Because Gavin speaks Spanish, one of the things that he was able to translate is from this Captain Valdez. It was written in the journal, who mentioned specifically that they destroyed the multiple amulets that these priests were wearing, and that they still had two left to destroy. And the one that was talked about in that particular entry was one that had to do with lightning, and they destroyed it. And he said, we still have two left to find, the Amulet of the Sun and the Amulet of the Moon. There is no entry in there that said the destruction, you know, rain down a terror of these creatures unleashed. You know what I mean? There was no mention of that. So that's why I say it's circumstantial at best, but you do have evidence of people destroying these things, and there is no evidence that it caused the creatures to...
No, but did we have evidence that destroying them caused the creatures to stop showing up after they destroy them?
You don't have specific evidence of that, but you don't have evidence that they do show up after that.
Okay. I guess where I'm at is that, feasibly, if Eileen Parker are the quote unquote, you know, and her people are the quote unquote good guys, maybe they want to use the amulet to kind of fight in the eventual war against cosmic horror, and actually, you know, actually but it could I, be a boon for good.
I think Delta Green knows very clearly, and agents of Delta Green know very clearly that it's uncontrollable, and that to try to do so would be folly.
But I don't think we know that. The priests use it to build. They think they use it to build their civilization.
Hold on, could I pause you guys just for a second? I want you to do me a favor and try to not think as Matthew and Grant, but try to think as Gavin and Caesar in terms of this argument. It's a very, very relevant argument, and both sides are valid, utterly valid. But how does Gavin perceive his role in Delta Green as it relates to the occult and everything? And then how does Caesar, what would his priorities be? Because each individual Delta Green agent has a commitment to the group, the syndicate, whatever you want to call it as a whole, but also has their own individual, reasons that they're in it. And so think about those. And where do they fall as you discuss this?
For Caesar, this is a good point, Joe. He is, he sees this entire opportunity. He probably sees the opportunity of joining Delta Green as a way to, legitimize Haunter and to give it more field testing and to make sure that it works so that he can sell it and, have legitimacy in his father's eye as like a businessman of competence. So as close to the edge as he's being brought sanity-wise, he would probably want to store this in Madison Westcott's house in order to see where it goes so that it can get more data to send back to the devs.
And I think Gavin is just so rocked by the possibility that we might be working for the wrong people, right? Mm. Like he joined to help and to help fight these forces that his mother fought, and now he finds out that he actually might, like, he's just so confused. So it seems like the only thing we can do for now is not do anything with the amulet and sit on it until we know who we should be working for.
Then if our option then is we know we're being tailed, and unless we have some sort of crazy Scooby-Doo split up in the hotel and run different ways down hallways and into rooms to try to like lose track of them, then I guess the safest way would be to keep the amulet with us to the green box and then to our next meeting.
Yeah, I agree. Time-wise, it's not worth it to detour to, I think.
You've used a lot of time.
Yeah.
You've used in trying to shake these tails and the indecision, etc. I think I'll generously say you've used 40 minutes of time. You've got about an hour 20 until midnight.
Okay.
Right, and the green box is at least a 20-minute drive away. So, 20-minute drive, you get there, you got an hour till you have to be back. That's sort of...
We also don't have to go to this meeting at midnight.
Yeah, it's true. We could blow the meeting off.
That will have repercussions, too.
Right.
Most likely
hits. Let's go to the green box and see if there's anything in
there.
You're
also being tailed.
Right.
Yeah, wouldn't it stand to reason that you'd be tailed to the green box?
Yeah.
I'm hoping that once we get to the automotive salvage center, that there's like a garage that can close, and they're not going to follow us into the salvage center, so they're going to know that we went there, but they're not going to know what went down inside. That's what I'm hoping for. So we got to go and see what the place looks like. Fine, we're being tailed.
If it's quiet for a while we're driving to the green box, Roger will break the silence. What are all of your kill counts?
Just imagine him sitting like in the far back of the SUV by himself.
Matthew just role-played slowly turning from the passenger seat to look back at the rear of the SUV in the third row where Roger sits in the dark smoking a cigarette with the windows up.
I think Magdalena deadpan, and she's got her gothic hair, piercings, gothic makeup, turns around, looks at Roger and just says, "One," and turns back around.
Wow.
What about you, Caesar?
There's blood on my family's name, but I haven't killed any myself. I grew up privileged, all right? All right? Is that okay with you, Cumstone? And then he hits the accelerator.
You'll get to the green box in 19 minutes and 50 seconds.
College boy.
Zero.
Jordy, I think I know your history. I'm sure you've got some blanks. I know you're not afraid to kill.
Jordy turns and, like, he's got his cigarette lit. He says, like, "Working on one, buddy." Takes a big drag.
Oh, man.
I lost count over time. A lot of explosives went off that I was responsible for. Death count was too high to count each number. Hand to hand,
for 343
kids. What the fuck?
Are you a mass murderer?
Jesus Christ.
I don't think you actually know what that means, what you just said.
Did you blow up a city block?
Hand killed 343 individuals.
He said hand to hand. Now, he wasn't even talking about the demolitions.
Even if he's incredibly well trained, like, honestly, to come out alive.
If he's one of, the most prolific hand-to-hand killers in the history of the military.
I think he killed one trained soldier and the rest were just infants, just like strangling them in their cribs. Like, that's his hand-to-hand kills.
It was a poorly guarded hospital, all right? 343. And I remember all of their eyes. All 700 and... I've lost count of their eyes.
86.
86.
Well, maybe not necessarily. Were any one-eyed?
Can't remember that.
I killed three cyclopes.
One guy had this defect where there was a third eye growing in the middle of his head. It all evened out. The point is... The point is... Tonight we're all going to have blood on our hands. Either theirs or ours. 343.
Gavin slowly turns around to look at Compstone again and says, I have to ask, were any of them real?
Wow. What a prick.
He's just cross-examining. That's what he was taught in school.
Yeah.
Rogers takes a long drag and blows it maybe a little too closely to Gavin Westover. I think we should kill the tail. It's their fault for putting the tail on us.
Shoot out the tires, maybe.
I mean, you got the sniper rifle.
Yeah, how good are you with that gun, Comstone?
I'm the best there is.
In a movie?
Killed 343 men.
I think that would draw so much attention to us. Sure, we're on the highway, but, like, we're still in Long Island. Like, if we just take out guns and shoot behind us and shoot a car...
Yeah, but you know,
hey, Malkovich, think fast.
If we go down, if we can maybe look on a map and see if there's a circuitous way to get to the box that has us going down a secluded road.
What is wrong with just going to the box?
Shoot the tires out.
What's wrong with just going to the box and having them follow us? Who cares? They don't know what we're doing.
I guess.
They're the same people that are going to meet us at the Peconic Recycling Center.
Yeah, they're keeping an eye on us, I guess. If it's even them, if they're even a tail, maybe they're not.
We're all hallucinating a tail.
I actually kind of like the idea. I don't like the idea of killing them, but I like the idea of, like, shooting out a single tire and just losing them. Like, that sounds cool to me.
Yeah. Do what you want. Do what you want. I'm just thinking, I don't want to draw more attention. We just got the cops to, like, chill out.
But they don't want to have any attention drawn to them either.
Yeah, if nobody sees us and I just put a bullet through the driver's forehead.
No, don't kill anyone.
This is why I don't trust him. We're like, shoot the tires. He's like, I shoot them in their left eye.
I'll make it rain out here.
Can you hit the tire, Roger?
I can hit the tire.
Yeah, just one. Just one tire.
Incredibly difficult.
Yeah, okay. From a moving vehicle.
Unbelievable, 45 to 60 miles an hour? It would be minus 40%.
Wow.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah, I'd have to roll under 20 then.
So, possible. One in five.
Possible.
What if I tried to kill the driver? Still is just as hard?
Yes.
What if we stopped the car? What if we pulled over? Roger leans out the window, sets up the shot. Still minus 20, or is that...
Still minus 20 to hit a specific tire from the angle. Unless you walk right up to it, shoot it, you know, stab it, something like that. If you're, you know, in the darkness, shooting into headlights at a tire, you'd take at least a minus 20.
Can we find a one-way street, emergency brake, turn the wheel 45 degrees, sideways it so they have to reverse out, give Roger a few more seconds? I don't know why I'm indulging this insane plan.
It's like in Godfather when they're going to the restaurant and they got Michael in the car with the Turk.
Yeah.
It's like going to Jersey? Maybe.
Yeah.
And then he spins around on the George Washington Bridge.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Except I shoot the driver in the face. All right, let's just go to the green box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And see what they do.
You go to the green box, which is essentially an auto salvage about 20 minutes outside of town. You pull up to this place. Car pulls up, stops outside, man. And hold on, let me kill some of this traffic because it is quiet here now. It's getting late. It's 11 p.m. You pull up and you see a big sign. B&C Auto Salvage, sort of red oval, white lettering, B&C underneath it, Auto Salvage, a little smaller. Big gate, big lock on it, and you see an office and garage that's sort of right next to it, and it's all dark and all locked up. It's 11 o'clock at night. Seems to be nobody around. You pull up and you stop. Your tail pulls up and stops maybe, I'm going to say 50 meters behind you, something like that. A pretty decent distance away. Just pulls over and stops, leaving their lights on.
Maybe we should go have a talk with them.
Yeah, I'm thinking, why not?
You want to go say hi?
Yeah. Well, they'll bring up. We'll bring our buddies Smith and Wesson.
Or we can just talk.
They'll do the talking for us.
Want to split up?
Yeah, I think we should, in the interest of time.
Yeah,
and also that way the amulet isn't left unguarded.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to case the joint here around the auto body. I'll hop out of the car and do an alertness, not a search. I want to see anything jumping out at me. Seems off. Just rocks. 27 under 84.
Nice. No, seems to be it's 11 o'clock. Business is not open. You see a really big yard that's going back into, and you can actually see in the distance, it's very dark, but it's almost like a black wall in the distance behind the all of these rows and rows of wrecked automobiles. And you see it's pine trees against the skyline. And, if you looked at it on a GPS, if Magdalena was looking as you came in, you could see that this thing backs right up against the Long Island Pine Barrens, which is like a state park. And so it's very remote.
Oh, dear. When I hear Pine Barrens, I think of The Sopranos.
Me too.
I'm not going in there.
Nope. I'm not living off ketchup packets.
It
just seems like a regular auto salvage that's not open.
Is there a green box anywhere?
You see no danger. The only danger is your tail.
Caesar uses athletics to hop the fence. Unless anyone has objections to it.
No. Do it.
You're going to have to roll, and you're going to have to succeed because of the barbed wire.
Got it. 42 under 50.
So I shouldn't say you have to succeed. You would just take damage if you didn't. But, yeah, all right. So you're able to negotiate the barbed wire. Now, do you have the card?
It's padlocked, so I was going to open the door for Gavin to come in since he was given the card, right?
Toss the card over.
Well, really, all the card is
the GPS,
coordinates, and there's three other numbers on it too. It says 41-2-17.
It's combination lock.
Combination lock. All right, so just geolocate where that is and start digging.
Fling it from your iPhone to mine, and it'll plug right into Maps.
I could have just given you the card before you left. But,
All right.
Either way, Caesar, you have the GPS coordinates, yes. And you know that this thing is way in the back of the lot, way in the back. You got a long walk ahead of you.
Okay.
So it's athletics to get over the fence?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I don't have great athletics, so I'll stay back.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I have the base 30, so I can stay back.
I'll help.
I thought you were going to talk to the guys in the car.
Yeah, I thought. Well,
I'm going to the car. Okay, I'll walk to the car.
I'll come with you to the car.
Coming to the car too.
Oh yeah, Gavin and I could have a little chat.
We leave the amulet with Jordy.
Yeah, I'll tell.
Jordy stays in the SUV with the amulet around his neck and he dozes off. Is that what you said?
Yes, that's what happened.
And Roger, Magdalena, and Gavin get out and start walking towards these two headlights 50 meters away, pulled over on the side of the road.
Fucking love this game.
Slowly walking.
Is anybody armed?
Roger is.
With what?
A Glock, I think.
Magdalena is with a pen knife and a spike stun gun.
I have a brand new set of law books at home.
Heavy.
I don't... okay. Did we talk about Roger flying with this Glock? It was because it's a registered weapon and he just, like, checked it and then got it on the other side. It was all legal.
Yeah, it's all above board.
Okay, so he's got
a thing in Fish Called Wanda where he takes it out and like flips it around the metal detector as he walks through it.
Exactly what he does.
He also has various knives strapped all over his body. He killed 343 people
in hand to hand.
He has a knife for each kill.
Jesus Christ.
So is Roger actually a serial killer? Is that what you're telling us? Like, perhaps so the most scary. Prolific serial killer of all time.
Roger killed a lot of people when he in the war, and he is deluded enough to think that, like, he started to count them and, like, imagine just like brup, 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 and then hand to hand, he 343 might be lowballing how many people he actually killed. Confirmed.
But we were talking about hand to hand, which you specifically said.
I know, but in his mind, hand to hand is just
hand to hand
to hand.
The, no weapon.
He didn't like crack 343 necks in the dark.
I was gonna say that is so many stealth kills in the dark. Yeah,
that's some Hugo Stieglitz level.
Yeah. Okay.
Caesar, so we're walking over there.
Caesar disappears into the darkness of this lot. First thing that happens is Caesar, within 200 feet, stops and sees in the distance a dog just walking.
On two legs.
On two legs.
Smoking a pipe.
Smoking.
No. Hey. You see a Doberman walking a few hundred feet in front of you. Think about it.
That would be something Roger would see.
We move back to Roger and Magdalena and Gavin, who are slowly walking towards this car. As you get closer, the two doors of the car open up. Clink, clink, the two side doors open up when you're maybe 20 meters away. And two men step out of the car and stand up. Both are in suits. Hard to see against the darkness of night. As you get to within 10 meters, they say, "Okay, that's enough." And you recognize the voice of the African-American CDC agent that you saw at the autopsy. He was the driver. He's standing by the driver's door. Across from him is the guy who was identified as Scott Wiley when you first met. And they're both just standing there looking at you. He says, "Okay, that's close enough."
Gavin puts up his hands to be like, "Hey, I'm not here for a fight."
Magdalena, they show both of their hands
as well.
Oh.
They put them both up over the sides of the car. They just say, "Is there something we can help you with?"
"Maybe. But we'd have a little chat. Since we're rocking this convoy all over Long Island, thought we'd take a little pee break. Talk to our friends. Are you our friends?"
"Well, that remains to be seen, doesn't it? I certainly thought so. But it seems you are checking a few things off your list before our meeting tonight. What's going on here? What's inside this place?"
"I don't know. What's inside the CDC offices?"
CDC offices.
Since you both labs. Work for the CDC.
Yeah, several right? labs, desks, a reception area. You're welcome to call. Can have my card.
Does your sniper friend work for the CDC as well? Don't see him around anywhere.
If you did, he wouldn't be a very good sniper, would he?
Guess not.
I'll take your card. And Magdalena starts walking a little closer to them. Hand outstretched, other hand up.
He reaches into his suit pocket, pulls out a business card, hands it over to you. It's identical to the one he handed Caesar. It says David, I believe it's David Greer. David Greer, CDC, you know, looks all legit, as far as you can tell. And he just says, as far as I know, we're all on the same side of this thing. Get this killer out of Glenridge. What do you think? And he looks at you, Magdalena.
I think you've been following us under orders from someone else, and you need to take a long, hard look at who that person is. You think we might work for the wrong people. Possibly you work for the wrong people. I'm not interested in talking to you. None of us are. We'll talk to you when we have our meeting. But I would really, really like it if you stopped tailing us. Thank you. And Magdalena walks back.
He chuckles, looks across at his partner. His partner looks at him, wry smile, kind of chuckles. They don't say anything. Look back at you, at the three of you.
She says behind her shoulder as they chuckle. She's like, that's cute. That's very cute.
Rogers just says, glad we had this little chat. I look forward to continuing it sometime soon. He turns to walk away and it's like, oh, maybe you can ask these men about your mother.
Oh. What?
Gavin just like he was trying to keep a straight face, and he's like, what about my mother?
Gentlemen?
I don't know what he's talking about, kid.
You know something about my mother?
I don't know you. I don't know your mother. All I know is make sure you make the meeting at midnight. That's what I was told.
They know. They know, Gavin.
They know what?
They know where she is. Odds are, they have her.
Gavin is just like, he's like, he is Comstone has shown no evidence of being sane at all. This entire operation, and yet he's so tempted by this information. He's just like looking back and forth between Comstone and the two operatives, trying to decide who's telling
the
truth.
Give me a human int roll.
Comstone will add fuel to the fire. Ask them if they were the ones that tailed your mother before she met them at a recycling plant in the middle of nowhere. Or were they too busy sucking at their mother's teat before they got the promotion to be the follow guys?
Fail. 85 over 60.
You don't know who's telling the truth.
What do you... And Gavin is just like... He suddenly feels very overwhelmed and very... He doesn't have any cool left. And he's just like, And he just walks back to the car following Magdalena.
It's a lot to absorb.
Comstone has not been a cool, calming presence.
He's not a reliable narrator.
No.
You guys turn around and start walking away. Again, these two agents, we see the camera pans to them and they look at each other and they pass a quizzical look and both hunker down and get back in the car and close their door, and that's when we go back inside the salvage yard. Caesar, what are you doing? You know you've got a few hundred meters to go to get to this.
And do I see the dog you mentioned?
Yeah, it's just sort of pacing.
So in his downtime, we talked about Caesar training in firearms, and under his father's house in Westchester County, Rye, New York,
he registered a Sig Sauer P365, which, what year is this set in? 2019?
2019.
Some best-selling handgun in 2019. It's a micro-compact weapon, 9mm handgun offering a 10+1 magazine. But he's new and green to the training. He's got a 29 in firearms, and he says,
"Two hands, Caesar. Two hands. Trigger discipline. Two hands and trigger discipline." And he pulls the gun up in front of him like an agent, like he's seen on TV. He's just completed the concealed firearms license and just started defensive firearms training. So it's more bluster than anything else. But it's the only thing that gives him confidence as he walks the remaining 200 meters towards the box with the dog between him and there. And he's just waiting as he takes each step to see if the dog notices him.
Okay. He keeps walking. The dog is pacing. It's not staying in one area. It's kind of moving around between cars, between rows. And as you get up to the place where it was, it has moved on. It's sort of in a different area, and you're holding that gun out there, two hands, sort of scanning it around. And you see the dog is over to the side of you now, parallel to where you are as you keep moving. Doesn't seem to have smelled you yet. There's a good heavy wind blowing in your face. Like, this might help.
Okay.
Doesn't seem to notice you, and you kind of move past it and continue to approach the coordinates unharmed. You look down at your phone, and you see you're within meters of this location.
Mm-hmm.
And you come up, and you look up, and you see in front of you a 1991 Winnebago Warrior 22. It's just like this big old Winnebago. It's just sitting in the back of this lot, and it is basically right where your GPS tells you to go. No wheels. It's just sort of stacked. Its axles are stacked up on these huge planks. And you see the side windows are all sort of blanked out. You can kind of tell that the windshield has like a silver, like reflector. Sun reflector. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, underneath yeah. it.
I approach the car and pull on the first door handle I can reach my hand onto to see if it's unlocked.
You reach up and you see that the car doors, passenger side, you're coming up from the passenger side. You see the passenger side door. As you come up to it, you start to reach out to grab the handle, and you see, as you're closer, that the entire frame of the door has been welded shut.
Oh, shit.
Okay.
You back off, and you look at the cab area where the door goes into the side, and you see that it has a heavy welded metal chunk that crosses from the door over into the, you know, sort of aluminum side of the Winnebago, and it's bolted in, and then it has a lock mechanism with a big old padlock that says Sergeant and Greenleaf on it.
Okay.
And you can see it's a combination lock.
Do I see anything related to the term Tom Terrific anywhere? I'm wondering if that's the name of the dog or something.
No.
Okay. Then I will enter in the code, which is like 42177 or something like that. I have the card with me, so I can look at it.
I think I said it wrong. It's 41217. So you're 41 two. Back to 217.
Sweating. Just click. Like
the opens. Padlock opens.
I pry open as quietly as I can, but I imagine it might be a little rusty and make a as it opens up.
Now, the sign of a goddamn 1991 Winnebago.
You open up this padlock, pull the door slowly open. We see you step inside into darkness.
What?
And we'll see you next week.
I knew you were going to do that.
Had to. You left me no choice. Oh, you went alone. You went alone.
No. That's where the monster is.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God.
What's in the Winnie?
What's in the Winnie?
Wow.